now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Right. Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, finding the courage to reclaim who you always have been. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and any other time in between. Each and every one of these broadcasts always have been focusing on the integration of spirituality and our mental health, and all within the context of our relationships, the relationship that we have with ourselves, or intrapersonal relationships, and our relationship with others, or interpersonal relationships, and certainly God or the divine, the relationship that we have with God. I am Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like more information about me, or if you want to leave me your comments about today's show, please visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. So again, www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And I just want to mention at the beginning here that these broadcasts are podcasted now. In case you want to go back and listen again, you can go back into the archive section and listen to previous shows. Just go on the website and you'll just scroll down a little bit and you'll just see where you can click on and you can listen to any show that you may have missed. Or if you want to go back and listen again, feel free to do so. And if you would like to call in and be part of tonight's show, I invite you to call the toll-free line. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And give us your insights, your comments, and thoughts on tonight's subject, Whistle While You Whittle, Spiritually Transforming the Uncarved Block. Well, speaking of the uncarved block, you've heard me talk about this many times within the context of Winnie the Pooh, but we're going to change it up a little bit. And just a reminder for those who might be tuning in for the very first time, in case you're wondering just what is so unique about reclaiming authenticity and why I place such an emphasis on the integration of our mental health and our spirituality in relationships. Is because when you think about it, we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, and even spiritual wounds in and through relationships. And yet, we can discover our greatest healing, our strength, our peace, forgiveness, and love and grace through healthier relationships. And ironically, these relationships that I'm talking about just might be within our own families. They might be among coworkers. They might be among friends. And yet, when we transform, when we find our healing, we're also going to transform others through our presence, through our grace and our understanding. We're going to be different in how we relate to ourselves and how we relate to others. And that's where it first and foremost shows up. In relationships, because it does all begin with how we treat ourselves. Because when we are compassionate with ourselves, we can certainly then become more compassionate with others. And when we are forgiving of ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves and everything that we've been through, and every decision that we have made and so on and so forth that has brought us to this, even this very moment, we then discover how this opened up our hearts to see and to live and be in gratitude with others. So all in all, transformation begins with us. In fact, one of my favorite psychiatrists and the founder of person-centered therapy once said that when another person is hurting, or if they're confused or troubled, if they're anxious or alienated, or if they're terrified, or if he or she is doubtful of any self-worth, or they're uncertain as to their own identity, then understanding and patience is called for. And this gentle and sensitive companionship of an empathic stance provides them illumination and healing. Because in such situations, deep understanding is the most precious gift we can give to another. Well, for, again, those of you new to the program, just want to say welcome aboard. And I just also like to say that I'm a firm believer that all of us come to this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for in this life in terms of our, let's say, our giftedness, our skills, our talents, our strengths, our character traits, and so on and so forth. And yet, as we go along in life, and this may be nothing new to people out there, and due to some unpleasant experiences, we may tend that we feel like we need to hide our giftedness, or we push our uniqueness way down so that others cannot see it, and therefore we fear that they're going to exploit it. Or perhaps we were told that we would never amount to anything, or whatever other voice we heard telling us that there's nothing special to us. All lies. And yet, when we do not realize our giftedness and our uniqueness, we tend to go through life functioning from that place of woundedness or returning to being a victim over and over again, instead of from that place of healing and wholeness and embracing our theatos, our uniqueness, our thisness. Well, one of the fascinating things I certainly enjoy, and I just, again, just fascinated just watching people who can do this well, is watching another person carve different objects from a block of wood or a log or a branch, whatever it might be. Because with each passing of the blade, by little, this form begins to take shape until the carver is pleased with what he or she has made. And as a kid, I used to carry around a pocket knife with me all the time. And whenever I would see a stick or another piece of wood on the ground, sure enough, I would start whittling. And sometimes I would whittle for just something to do. I was bored or just to pass the time. And other times I would try and carve out a simple but yet very rough object. Well, since those precious childhood memories, I've had several conversations with wood carvers down through the years who all have this unique gift of being able to see the potential of, let's say, warmth and beauty coming from an uncarved block of wood. In fact, some of the most fascinating stories come from people who see their work as merely stripping away pieces of wood until a desired object appears. And to quote one worker, you know, the bowl, the spoon, the animal, whatever I was carving was there all along. I just removed the excess pieces of wood. In preparation for this particular show tonight, I just did a little research on different societies that carve wood. And, of course, we're familiar with Alaskan people and the totem poles and so forth. But I didn't know if anybody knew out there that in the traditional Hawaiian society, that carving wood was more than just a hobby. It was actually a way that they connected with the gods that they served. And the old Hawaiians thought that everything in nature had a spirit power called mana. People used to think that the trees had this mana because they watched over the land. And so it was a great undertaking to carve something beautiful from the trees that would offer, or let's say, sacrifice the wood for this to be made. And so that connection to the land and the universe and to God just remains so, so strong. And, you know, when you think about carving wood and finding the beauty that comes forth from something plain, something that just, I don't see it. The same is true in our spiritual life. I mean, our uniqueness is there in all of us, in all of its fullness. And we just need to remove everything that's been getting in the way of that which truly needs to be seen. And it begins with us. I mean, one of the tougher questions out there for us to ask ourselves, and as well as the rest of our lives, is what really clouds my vision from seeing myself as I truly am, as an eternal soul? What clouds our spiritual vision? I'm very fond of Joseph Rael, Beautiful Painted Arrow. As you know, I've mentioned him many, many times on this show. And I love his quote regarding becoming medicine. You know, how do we do that? And his quote is that the way you become a medicine person is that you practice who you are because you're already medicine. No one gives it to you. You are already it. And again, what gets in the way of that? What keeps that limited? What convinces us that, well, there's really not a whole lot more to me than what I see? And that's where the, let's say, the spiritual whittling takes place, to remove those things which get in the way so the beauty and the warmth of who we truly are can come through for the benefit of not just ourselves, but for all people. Well, tonight, we have a very special treat for everybody, a dear friend. We've done many sweat lodges together and ceremonies, drumming circles. He's an avid wood carver, shamanic healer, counselor, and one who loves to work with the energy of all people and all things. Please welcome to the show, Ben Jezerski. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Jim. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity. How are you doing this evening?
Doing all right, man. Thanks for having me.
That's good. Yeah, yeah, I was pleased. And for those of you who don't are not privy to the previous conversation, but I reached out to Ben just because this whole idea, this concept of, you know, how do people see a form or something beautiful in an uncarved block of wood? And as I sat with this and meditated on it, it just started to come together. And, you know, I just got this, called a spiritual hit. And I just said, well, call Ben. Like, okay, I'll call him tomorrow. No, call Ben. Okay, I got it. I'll call tomorrow. No, call Ben. Like, okay. So, Ben, that's how I reached out to you. I was like, okay, I got it. I will call. Okay, everybody happy now? Good. But yeah, it's just unique. And it just seems like, as we were talking, that you were also in sync with this as well. You know, of course, this is right up your alley with just the many, many years that you've been, you know, carving wood. And I'll let you share, you know, with the folks at home, just the uniqueness that of what you carve and how you begin to see something coming from just a simple block of wood or a limb or a log or something like that. So, out of curiosity, how many years has it been since you've been carving?
Well, I, you know, I'm sitting here. It's funny, but I thought it would be appropriate to take down the first spoon that I ever carved. I have some of my old stuff hanging on the wall here at home. And it's funny because some people talk about how they, you know, after a few years, they take their old stuff and they commit it to the burn pile almost. Not that they're ashamed of it, but that they've moved on. And for me, I see an old piece hanging on the wall, and I look at it, and it teaches me something. I look at it, and I think what I would do differently now, or, you know, would I have used a different wood for that same project? And the first piece that I ever carved was, finished, was January 19th of 2017.
Okay.
So I've been actively carving about... going on a little over 7 years now.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm still a baby at it. And it teaches me something every time I pick up my tools, which is really neat, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you, your first piece was done in 2017. Like, how did you become interested in wood carving? Like, what made you say, I can do this?
Well, that's a really good question. I had a friend back in the day who started carving spoons, and we'd run into each other at parties, and then gradually everybody would wander away, and it would be me and him talking about spoons because apparently that was his rap. And so
okay,
yeah, and most people had heard his stories before, so I started picking his brain, and it seemed like a neat hobby. I've always been interested in sort of that medieval craftsmanship.
Okay,
and the tools that you use when you work with wood today have changed very little. I mean, maybe the materials that the blades might be made out of are a little bit more refined, but for the most part, a knife is a knife. A hook knife is a hook knife. You know, they tend to look the same, tend to be almost exactly the same. And at first I thought, oh, that's kind of neat. That's a neat hobby that he's found. And then after talking with him at a few parties, it really started to pique my interest, and I got my hands on some inexpensive tools that I ordered. I didn't want to jump right in because, you know, when you start a hobby that involves buying tools, it becomes a black hole. And so I got a couple of inexpensive tools and went to work on just an old piece of wood from my wood pile, and just to see what the tools would do. And I got a what looks like a bathtub with a rat tail, and that's, you'll hear most spoon carvers that I've ever talked to say the same thing. Oh yeah, I've got one of those rat tailed bathtubs at home too. And because you don't know the techniques, you don't know, you don't really know how to use the tools. But that first kind of cold day in my garage, man, I was hooked. And it just kind of grew from there.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, you mentioned spoons. Have you carved any like bowls or other, like utensils, cups or anything like that?
That's the thing. Spoons are really what trips me. I've done some spatulas. I do some scrapers and stuff like that. The only bowls I've ever done are when I maybe have carved a handle a little too thin, and the bowl of the spoon kind of gets turned into a catch-all bowl that I'll end up giving to my wife. But I've never really done any bowl. Yeah, she gets the broken ones, just like I get the burnt cookies.
Okay.
But I've never really formally carved bowls. I've done a few pretty simplistic stylized sort of tribal type masks that I have hanging on my walls. I've played around with power tools and done some cutting boards and started to reclaim some old tables and things like that. But as far as just straight up hand tool work, it's typically spoons and other types of utensils.
Hmm. Okay. Nice. Well, do you carve anything else? You mentioned like a table or I forget exactly what you said before that, but as far as like the spoons that really do it for you, but has anybody asked you to carve something that was just rather unique that you've never done before?
Well, once I got a request for a handle for a feather fan.
Yeah.
You should know.
Yeah.
And I played around with doing some sort of simplistic but stylized tribal masks. It was part of an art project that I was working on.
Yeah.
For myself, it was a project of discovery, actually. I'd pick up a piece of wood and I'd look at it and I'd kind of feel, the energy, the spirit in that piece of wood, and and try to help that emerge into the world in the form of a mask. So gradually I did maybe five or six of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for those of you out there who don't know, you know, the feather fan handle story, you know, I'd asked Ben, because somebody had gifted me, I believe it was hawk feathers, and, you know, it's like, I need a handle for this. And so I just said, not sure what I'm talking about here, but I kind of like did a rough sketch and like, yeah, let's see what you want, what comes to you. And the holes were drilled, and I just put each feather in it. Just beautiful. It was almost like a whole wing from a hawk. And yeah, just turned out really, really beautiful. Still have it. I always will. So again, thank you, Ben, for doing that for me. But yeah, that's the feather fan story. Yeah.
And thank you for asking, Jim. I really appreciated the chance to do it. You know, I love commission work. Not too long ago, a friend of my wife's just said to me, I want a spoon, I want something long, and it has to have grain that pops. I can do that. You know?
Okay.
Not too specific. Man, I love that, because that to me really allows me to just let the process happen. And that's what I love the most about it is I'm not really a fan of doing cookie cutter work. And I love the fact that no two pieces of wood are the same, even if they come from the same tree. The grain is different. The structure of the wood is different. And so different pieces are going to emerge. And I almost feel caged when somebody asks me to do multiple copies of the same spoon.
Do you ever take an opportunity to say, in theory, okay, but in reality, because of the grain is different, that it's not going to be identical?
Actually, I have. I had a request one time from a family friend who wanted four of the same spoon because she wanted to keep one and she wanted to give three to some close friends of hers.
Okay.
And so the one that she had seen was actually a year older than the other three that I was carving. And so because it had aged, wood tends to darken. Color tends to change as it ages. And so she said, oh, well, that's good. I'll keep that one because it's a little bit different. And you know, the other three came out pretty darn close. But there's always going to be a little bit of difference. And again, anybody who is going to purchase something like a wooden spoon or a handcrafted, you know, ceramic vessel that's you know, anything that you're involving with firing or cutting, or there can be differences. And the typical person who's going to purchase something like that is totally fine with that.
Oh, okay. All right. Nice. Do you have a particular favorite kind of wood that you enjoy working with over and against others?
Yeah, I actually, one of the woods that I really love the most is mulberry. It's just a beautiful golden yellow. So when you look at a piece of wood, if you were to, for example, cut a log in half lengthwise and flip it open, you'll notice that on the outside you tend to get a lighter color than on the inside. The outside is the sapwood, and the inside is the heartwood. And so mulberry has this golden yellow heartwood with like a creamy off-white sapwood. And as it dries, it turns into this just gorgeous butterscotch brown. And it's nice. Yeah, it's a great wood to carve. I love working with the fruit woods. Cherry is also another favorite. And lately, one of the woods I've really liked working with is butternut. It's like a blonde walnut. A guy I know called me up and he had dropped a butternut on his property, and he said, you know, you want some wood? Well, of course. So I went up and I got a bunch of it, and I've been working with it. And it's just a great wood to work with. It carves like a dream, and it looks really nice as it ages. Yeah.
Yeah, you made me think of, you know, just childhood, you know, simple carving and things like that. And I think before I knew any like fruit woods or things like that, you know, probably the easiest for me to not carve, but get out the old X-Acto knife and make some deep cuts in it, was the old balsa wood. And very easy. Of course, I would make little airplanes and things like that because they were nice and light and so forth. But yeah, fascinating. Yeah. Well, that segues nicely into just what do you see when you're looking at this, like an uncarved block of wood or a piece of wood or a log or a limb or something, when it's just in its raw state? Beautiful, but it's in its raw state. Like, what do you begin to see? How do you know that a spoon is in there? Or how do you know that a mask is in there?
Well, it's interesting, Jim. One of the things, you know, depending on the way you split a log, and so when I make spoons, the first thing I do after I split a log is cut them into billets, or what are known as billets. They're like little planks.
Okay.
And so they look like a mini 2x4, right? And then that way it's easier to trace the template on the surface. You kind of have an idea of where the grain is going. And depending on how you carve the billet, you can come out with a bullseye pattern in the bowl, or you can come out with straight lines in the bowl.
Hmm.
So if you carve towards the center of the log, like from the outside into the center, you're going to get a bullseye effect. If you flip it over and carve from the inside out, you're going to get straight lines. And because you may not necessarily have split the log perfectly, sometimes the bullseye is off, sometimes the lines are a little crooked, but each of those adds character to it. And so sometimes you have to split a log in a certain way because of a knot that's in it or because of a defect. I don't fell any trees for my work. I only use what I call roadkill wood. If someone drops a tree, or if wind has blown a tree down in a storm, or if someone has taken a tree down and put it out, depending on the kind of wood, I'll take what I got as long as it's not too old. It still has to be green wood, wet, you know.
Right.
And so depending on how the wood's cut, then I'll look at the way the grain is and be able to determine, you know, is this going to make a good spatula, for example? Does it have a lot of straight grain? Or is this going to make a nice bowl? Can I really get a good bullseye out of it? And then, of course, the other thing is, even if I do use a template, even if I do trace the shape of the spoon, the wood's got its own ideas sometimes about how it wants to turn out. Sometimes as you're carving the wood, you'll find an inclusion, which is like a deposit of sap that might be inside the wood. You'll find that in a lot of fruit woods, like cherry sometimes has a lot of inclusions in it, or sometimes there's a hidden knot in it, and you've got to work around it. And sometimes that's a little frustrating when you argue with the wood, but when you really listen to what the wood is telling you, then, you know, sometimes something really great turns out that you didn't even foresee. What I try to do, though, is just let the wood tell me. I try to go into it without any major determination of what's going to come out of it, unless, of course, it's an order from someone. But other than that, I just kind of let the wood do its thing and tell me what to do.
Yeah, nice. That's a nice way to put it. Okay. Well, I tell you what, I would really love for everybody out there in Internet Radio Land, I'd really love to hear your heart on this matter. So we're going to take a quick break here. And again, if you want to call in and ask myself or Ben any questions about carving, we're going to continue this conversation. But we're going to twist it up a little bit in terms of going deeper and really looking at this whole metaphor of how do we integrate, let's say, this theme of wood carving with our own spiritual level. You know, just how do we see? Maybe not the natural grains in our lives, let's say, or where is the bullseye in our lives, but how do we begin this spiritual whittling process? Okay. So again, if you want to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. And I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. And I'll be back with you in 1 minute. All right. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. If you were with me in the first half of the show tonight, you know that we have a very special treat, a dear friend of mine, Ben Chizursky. And we have done many sweat lodges together and other ceremonies and rituals and drumming circles. And I asked Ben if he would come on the show and kind of pick his brain regarding being an avid wood carver, a shamanic healer, a counselor, and one who loves to work with the energy of all people and all things. So, Ben, welcome back after the break.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay. All right. Well, earlier in the show, we were talking about more like the practical aspects of how you got into wood carving and so forth. Just fascinating stuff. And I really love how you put it at the end, right before the break, that you just allow the wood to speak to you and just kind of get a feel for it and its energy and which way the grains are running and things like that. And just what does it want to become, you know, for lack of a better phrase. So could you say just a little bit more about that?
Sure, Jim. You know, and this will kind of tie in to something that you mentioned about sweat lodges and ceremonial work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many other people look at it this way, and I haven't really asked anyone else this question. I've heard artists talk about it before, and I've heard craftspeople talk about it before. But before I even go to work on a piece of wood, there's the laying out of the tools. There's the sharpening or the stroping of the knives, cleaning things up, arranging things. And there really is a feeling of entering that space.
Mm.
Very much like when we prepare for a ceremony, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got the space before the ceremony where you're getting ready, and then there's the space after the ceremony where you clean up, but then there's that space in the middle where the unknown takes over.
Yeah.
And even though you've got the familiar there, you've got the form of the ceremony itself, whether it's the dance arbor or the lodge, or in this case, the specific tools that you're going to use and the template that's laid out, you've got those things that are familiar. You've still got so many unknown qualities. And so for me, what I find most rewarding about this work, I mean, it's great to see the spoon come into the world, right? It's great to kind of be the hole that that spoon falls into the world through, so to speak.
Yeah.
But for me, it's the process.
Mm.
And I really enjoy the, you know, not only carving the spoon, the feel of the tools, the smell of the wood. I love being out in the driveway, being that guy. Because we live, you know, as you know, we live in a vinyl village. And so I'm mm-hmm. kind of like that guy standing out in his driveway making wood chips while everybody's driving to and from work or people are walking their dogs. And mm-hmm. and like even that's part of it. So for me, all that's tied in to the spoon. Every spoon's a product of everything.
Hmm.
And nice. And so to allow that whole thing to kind of take place, and out of it falls this craft, is mm-hmm. just really, really wonderful.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Nicely, you know, explained. Beautiful. Well, let's see. You got my mind going in like 12 different directions right now, but I guess next question would be, you know, how does, and you've even alluded to this, but how is working with wood or carving the wood and working with others deepened your own faith, your spirituality, your own authenticity? Like, where does it integrate? How does it intersect and so forth?
You know, I think it's great to be able to talk about it in these terms, right? Because, mm-hmm. You know, anyone who's created, who does something creative, whether it's sculpting or drawing or writing or whatever it is, the very act of that kind of pulls you, some people will say pulls you out of yourself, but I really feel it pulls you deeper into yourself because you're forming a connection with the object, right? And in a sense, you're becoming, you mentioned Joseph Rael, right? You mentioned what Joseph mm-hmm. refers to as the hollow bone.
Right.
Become a channel for it. And this thing is birthed through you and into the world. And so to be able to kind of hold space for that moment, even though you're really co-creating, right? I want to carve a spoon as if I'm the only force at work here, right? Well, yeah. So I had a teacher one time who said, you know, the Western view or the consumerist view is, you know, mankind is making more computers now than he ever has before. The shamanic view is computers are using mankind at an ever-growing rate to be born into the world.
Mm.
And that kind of illustrates the idea of the medicine wheel, right? We get our inspiration in the East. We go through the process in the South. The thing shows up in the West. It becomes physical in the West.
Uh-huh.
And then everybody gets the benefits of using it, which is the North, right? And then an improvement is made, and so the cycle begins again, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to get too far off topic with it, but any creativity seems to be a process of that, right? This idea shows up, and we will, you know, some people say, well, I thought of it. And other people will say, this idea came to me. And so just that the inspiration that comes in the creative process feels really big. And it feels like it comes from somewhere. And I don't know where that somewhere is. We can, you know, we can neatly frame it up and say, well, you know, spirit gave it to me. But I don't even know what that means in a way, you know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. I know what the convenience of words mean, but I don't know what that means. And then all of a sudden, here I am in the midst of it, tending to it, and then it shows up. And that's really been a deepening process for me. It's taught me more to listen to my tools, to listen to the wood, to allow these inspirations to come, rather than saying, okay, I have to make this spoon. So it's a matter of surrender.
Mm.
And of being guided in what's going on. And so much of my own healing and the healing that I've seen with others is really, you know, people who have fought to control things all their lives as a way of survival, to finally be able to surrender and to fall into the grace of that and to know that you're going to be caught and to know that something's going to happen that's going to involve healing.
Yeah.
Are going to involve growth or transformation, which really synonyms for the same thing.
Yeah.
That's the deepening, you know, that's the deeper connection that has come out of something as simple as picking up a knife and a billet of wood.
Yeah. Again, beautifully put, beautifully put. Yeah. I think a lot of people, psych themselves out, let's say, when you start mentioning, you know, how to become a co-creator. You know, it's like, well, that's not my role. I'm not a creator, but in a sense, we all are. You know, we come into the world with that creative gift to us. And, you know, discovering, again, who we are, and not just the gifts that we bring in, but, again, how does that fit? Where do we fit? And what does it mean to be this eternal soul? And awaken that awareness in us. And then how do we live this out? And it's a process of this, you know, being a co-creator or being, one who is a being of light, one who carries the light out into the world, you know, one who is constantly being molded and shaped and, well, let's say, carved and so forth, and removing the pieces that don't belong until, you know, as you would say, you know, that spoon emerges or that bowl emerges. Well, what is it that we need to remove in our lives, or that process of removing that which is temporary, that which is unnecessary, that which is superimposed on our spiritual vision, you know, and keeping us from seeing ourselves as that eternal soul and the light that carries in and of itself. I'm often reminded of just the beginning quote of Marianne Williams's the Course in Miracles. She has it in her book, you know, that our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate, but our rather our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure, because it's our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. And so, I mean, certainly tying in nicely with, you know, your description of how you work with wood and what you're able to see and birthing that in to become something that was there all along. You know, I kind of get the impression, as you said, you know, you're in your driveway and wood chips are flying and people are driving by. It's like, there he is, he's at it again. But it's more than just whittling away scraps of wood, you know, pieces of wood. You know, you are in that creative process. And just to trust that which is intended to come forth will come forth. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, Jim, you know. And and it's just, it's so much of this is not necessarily figuring out who and what we are, but letting go of the things that we are not.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And not viewing these things as unnecessary or the enemy, right? They serve their purpose. Like, for example, some people will carve a spoon, like the handle of a spoon, they'll leave the bark on. Right. And you sand down the bark and you oil it, and so the bark remains on the handle of the spoon. That's only done in very specific cases for a decorative spoon, right? But for the most part, okay, you remove the bark. But that bark protected the wood while the tree was growing.
Yeah.
And now that you're making the spoon, that bark is no longer necessary. Well, our own patterns in life are the same, you know, like some of us might have patterns of hiding. Some of us might have patterns of being bullies or of emotional or physical or whatever psychological addictions of some kind. Mm-hmm. And those like overeating, we'll use that as an example.
Okay.
And these might be patterns, practices that helped us feel safe in a very turbulent environment and protected us from the turbulence of that environment because we could numb out or retreat to them. And our healing, removing of these patterns is not the price of our healing. It is the healing. And that allows the self that's buried underneath it to emerge. You know, and I'm sure this is something that you're quite familiar with in your own work, and you've probably seen it countless times and even experienced it yourself. You know, we lose the patterns that protected us in our life. They're not the enemy. They served a purpose, and now they fall away as we emerge. And I think it's working with Joseph's work and doing this type of work sort of brings a metaphoric quality or makes us aware of a metaphoric quality of life. And I think the metaphor is there. It's pretty obvious that when you're working with the spoon, the removal of the pieces that aren't it allows it to emerge just as our own healing does with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you made me think of, you know, healing at just the right time, you know, because that log or that limb or that block of wood could have just remained in the pile. But for one reason or another, it was selected.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's time for something to come forth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And even in the sense that, you know, what someone has discarded is now taken, removed from its old life, transformed through this process, and is now rebirthed into something new, and then goes on to serve. Right. I mean, we have serving spoons in our kitchens, and by we, I mean pretty much everybody I know has a serving spoon or a cooking spoon, a wooden spoon in their kitchen that was handed down from like a grandmother, right?
Yeah, further back.
And that was a discarded piece of wood. And now it's gone on to serve. It's gone on to serve dinners. It's gone on to cook. It's gone on to provide nourishment for others. The same way we do in our own healing, as we're transformed by these processes that are often difficult and unpredictable, and we're allowed to emerge and become who and what we really are and do the work that we're here to do.
Yeah. So, again, nice segue into this integration that you do with the wood carving and how it's just opened up your own understanding of your faith, your spirituality, your authenticity. How does that just segue nicely into the work that you do with clients on that spiritual level to allow them to, let's say, walk through their healing as it unfolds for them, as it emerges?
Yeah, I think that's the soul of it, Jim. I mean, you know, when we hold space for others, whether it's in the sweat lodge or through sacred dancing or whether we're working with, you know, one-on-one or in group work with others, you know, we're not there to make them into anything. You know, no. We're there to kind of help them reveal themselves. And so sharing that space with them, holding that space with them, the same way I can look at a block of wood and I can say, well, this is what you're going to be. And the wood says, yeah, that's fine. No, it's not. And it does its own thing, you know. And we can kind of help the process along. We can kind of work with what we're given. But in the end, what comes out of that is as much the wood's idea, if not more the wood's idea than my own. Yeah. And it's the same way when we work with the people who come to see us. You know, the work is between them and God. Mm-hmm. And we can guide them. We can work with them. But in the end, they're the ones toughing it out, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's between them and God, and we've just got to hold that space for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having your best plans kind of foiled by an inclusion that's in the wood or a piece of grain or a line of grain that kind of goes a little crazy at the last minute that you weren't aware of and so changes the whole structure of what it is you're doing. It teaches you that not everything is going to work out the way you want it to or the way you believe it should. And in the end, you let the process really run its own, and you will learn to work with that and not fight it, not push the river, not try to control the things that are not yours to control. And that's where the real healing emerges.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Very nice. Okay. Well, what would you say to anybody out there listening who would like to begin carving or deepen their own spirituality through woodworking, or even, I mean, we didn't touch on ceramics, but people who work with clay, you know, same principle, you know, you throw a lump of clay on the wheel, you get it going, and in, you know, a blink of an eye, it could all just flop, or it turns into a beautiful vase, or it could be a bowl, or it could be a pitcher, it could be anything. So, I mean, I'd say that the same principle applies to, you know, those who work with any, like, raw material, let's say, whether it's wood or clay or stone or something like that. But, you know, say somebody out there, you've inspired them tonight and they want to begin. How would you get them started?
I would say, you know, jump in. Check videos on YouTube, poke around. There's all kinds of pages on Facebook, some of which are more like invite only. So you've kind of got to sniff around. But you know, that's a good way to start. The other thing is just, you know, look around for, I would say, inexpensive but good quality woodworking tools. You can find them in quite a few places on Etsy and through eBay. And invest in Band-Aids, because you're going to need them when you first start out, you know. Every time I go out into the garage, my wife makes me recite three simple rules, and that's keep all my blood and bones inside my body, keep all my limbs intact, and have fun. And the truth is, I don't always follow rule number one or number two.
But she wouldn't come out and patch you up?
Well, I also invested in a good first aid kit.
There you go.
Yeah, because if you don't remember the fact that you're working with a sharp object, you'll be reminded of it. It's easier to carve with tools that are surgically sharp than it is with tools that are dull. You know, one of the things is also in remember to allow the medium that you're working with to teach you, right? The same as if someone's learning to tend fire in a lodge or pour water in a lodge, your biggest teacher is the fire or the water. We can give you the form. We can tell you how to hold the knife. We can tell you how to tend the fire. But at the same time, we can't give you the experience that you're going to get if you're open to it. And so to remember that the medium that you're working with is going to teach you, and not everything is going to turn out the way you think it should, but in a way, that's good. That's your teacher. I mean, I will tell you, I've had very little in the way of formal teaching with wood carving. You know, the going joke is, like, most of the best stuff, I picked it up on the streets, you know. I talked to a few of the guys who had, a few of the wood carvers who had been around for a while through a page I'm in, a site I'm in on Facebook, and I've watched some videos, but for the most part, you know, you learn by doing.
Hey. All right. Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful. Well, let's see. How can others get in touch with you? Do you have a website or other information that they could look you up if they want to get in touch with who you are and take a look at some of your work?
Sure. If they would like to, you know, read a little bit more and follow along on my blog, which kind of really parallels the things that we've talked about tonight, they can check out my blog on WordPress. And they can go to bjezierski1. That's bjezierski and the number 1 .wordpress.com. And if they'd like to learn a little bit more about the spiritual side of my practice, they can look me up on Standing West. That's StandingWest.com.
All one word? All one word, Standing West?
Standing West, all one word. All right. And finally, if they'd like to see some of my work, they can go to Etsy, and they can just look up my site, which is Bonja the Bodger. That's B-O-N-J-A, the Bodger, B-O-D-G-E-R.
All right. Wonderful, wonderful. Okay. Well, thanks again, Ben, for coming on the show. I think definitely informative and enlightening and transformative. And again, thank you for your willingness and openness to do that. And I hope everybody out there has enjoyed this broadcast. If you do have any questions or you just want to have any comments, again, just invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you weren't able to get all the information that Ben had just shared, just go ahead and shoot me an email on that website and I can give you the information. I can definitely get back to you. All right. So Ben, thanks again for coming on and blessings in the work and just continue to bless others and bring healing. And, you know, hopefully everybody comes away with a deeper, greater appreciation of just allowing wood, the what you have to work with, allow it to speak to you and just be part of that co-creation of what needs to come forth even within their own lives. So again, thanks again.
And thanks to you, Jim. I really appreciate the chance to come on and chat with you. You're doing great work, man, and it's good to talk with you.
Yeah. As always, good to talk with you. Well, everybody out there, again, thanks for tuning in this evening. And again, hopefully you've come away with some wonderful information to deepen your spirituality and mental health. And so tune in 2 weeks. We'll be back with some fresh ideas and further integration of our mental health and our spirituality. There we go. But in the meantime, everybody, be careful out there, behave yourselves, And until we see each other again or talk to each other again, may God hold you in the palm of God's hands. Everybody take care. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauk, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.